Now we're holding on page of Bays in Yuma Ois Memtes. Page Chof Beis in Yoma Ois Memtes. We learned last time that the Gemara had quoted a couple of times a pasuk that says Vayarichu Habadim, that the poles of the Orin were extended, and you have different opinions whether that means that they extended them as in they moved them further out within the rings, or whether it means that the Derech Nes they were enlarged. But anyway. And they remain there. It says Ad Hayom Hazeh, until this very day, which we said maybe that means that the Oren is in fact there underneath the Beis Mikdash Ad Hayom Hazeh, and we discussed the ins and outs of whether in fact it means that. So now the Gemara continues by re-examining that pasuk. Rav Yehuda Rami, Rav Yehuda pointed out a contradiction within the pasuk itself. Page Chof Beis in Yom, yes. So Rabbi Yehuda pointed out a contradiction within the pasuk itself. First it says that the poles of the Aron were lengthened, were stuck out, and the ends, the tips of the Badim could be seen from outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the pasuk continues, but they couldn't be seen on the outside. So could you see them from outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim or could you not? Okay, sad. So what does this mean? They're pushing against and sticking out in the Parechas, which the Gemara is going to talk about soon. What Parechas? There was a wall there in the first Beis Hamikdash, as we learned before, so we'll see soon. Nirin, so you could see them, but you couldn't see them. But you could see the fact that they're sticking out, but you didn't see the actual ends of the bottom themselves. Tani Nami Hochi, we learned similarly in Abraisa. When it says Vayarichu Abadim, that the Badim were extended, or Vayiro Rosh Abadim, as the other gear said, when it says they could see the ends of the Badim, Yocholoyu Zozin Mimakoimam, so you would think that means they didn't move from their place, that they kept them in the place, that they kept them in their regular position on the poles, on in the rings of the Aron. Now we know, as we talked about the other day, you're not allowed to take them out of the rings of the Aron. There's a loisa saying that, which in fact is discussed later on in this Masechta, but they could slide them back and forth. So you would think that they didn't move them from their places. Talmud Lomar, Vayiro Rosh Abadim, Vayirechu Abadim. No, because the pasuk says that they could see the ends of the badim, or the badim were extended, meaning, in other words, that you could see. And Marsha points out, in other words, the point is, you think about it, the whole Oren was only 2.5 by 1.5 amos, and it was in the middle of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which was 20 by 20 amos. So you'd have to have, if the badim are not moved from their place, in the sense that if they keep them exactly. Centered on the Aron, they're not going to reach all the way to the Parechas because they didn't make them that long in the first place. So therefore, it means that they must have moved them in the sense they slid them as far forward as possible without actually taking them out of the rings. That's how Marsha learns. On the other hand, there are other Mefarshim who refer to, and there's actually a Medrash or a Breiser or something that says as much, that actually there was a nest and they were lengthened more than normal. Whatever the case, so you would think that it was so. So no, it says Vayarichu Abadim, the Badim were extended. So either they were extended outward in the sense that they were pushed as far forward as possible, or that a nest happened and they were extended. Iva Yiro Rosh Abadim, but given that it says you could see the ends of them, Yochu Yomakarin Vyotzin Baparechas, you would think that means they actually rip through the Parechas and you actually see the ends of them sticking out when you're standing in the Kodesh. No, Tamad Lomar, Velo Yiro Achutza. No, because the Pasuk says they weren't visible on the outside. Well, Iva Lo Yiro Achutza Yochu Lo Yir Noigin, so then maybe it means they weren't even touching the Parechas, Tamad Lomar Vayiro. But the fact is, the Pasuk says they were visible. So what is it? Were they visible or were they not? Hoketzad. So therefore, the Braisa says the same thing that Rabbi Yehuda had said, that they were sticking out against the Parechas. They were pushing against the Parechas. They stuck out. You could see bumps over there. The Yotzin, the Parechas, they were sticking out into the Parechas. They resembled the two breasts of a woman sticking where you see when she's wearing a dress. You can see the outline of them underneath it, but you don't actually see them themselves. Shenema, and we find a pasuk that refers to the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people using that kind of expression. Sur hamur deidili, my beloved is to me like a bundle of myrrh, which is a type of fragrance, one of the ones they had in the Torah. Bein shodayolin, he rests between my breasts. So we see, in other words, that there was something in the Beis Mikdash that could be described as between the breasts, namely between the two poles of the Aron, where the Shechina rested And that's why we're saying the Kohen Gadol would bring the Ketores Davka over there, and therefore, so that's how it looked from the outside. In fact, Maushab points out the words Bein Shaddai in the Pasuk can be rearranged to spell the words Shnei Bade. So therefore, you have a direct hint in the Pasuk over there that we're talking about the two Badim and the way it looked like when it's sticking out into the Poros. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Ketina, B'shar Shehoyu Yisrael Oinon L'Rem, more on this topic of the love between Hashem and the Jewish people that was expressed, as you saw in the Kodesh Kedashim, B'shar Shehoyu Yisrael Oinon L'Regel, when the Jewish people would come on Aliyah L'Regel, Megalon, or Megalon L'Hem Es HaParechas, they would roll up the Parechas. Now on the face of it, it means the Parechas of the Kodesh Kedashim. We're going to see soon in the Gemara, maybe not necessarily. Anyway, on the face of it, it means the parochas of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they would roll it up. They would show them in the Kruvim where they are embracing, that are hugging one another. And they would tell them, Ru'uchi baskem lifnei amokim, look how beloved and precious you are to Hashem, kechibas zochrim nekeva, like the way a man and a woman, a husband and wife, love each other, is the relationship that you have with Hashem. Now, Maharsha points out the Gemara in Bava Basra actually has a machlokas about this. Now you have two psukim. One of them said, now you have like this. You have there were several different sets of kruvim that we have to talk about as the Gemara is going to go through over here. You have the kruvim that are on top of the Orin, the ones that are described in Parshas Truma. Then you have in Sefer Melachim, when it tells how when Shlomo built the Bais Mikdash, he made two oversized kruvim that stood on the floor, and their wings stretched across the entire Kodesh Kedoshim and also overshadowed the Orin with the Kapodis and the kruvim that were on it already. And third of all, then you have the kruvim that are painted or designed on the walls, where the Psukim mentioned, as the Gemara is going to quote in a bit, that you have there were designs of kruvim and palm trees and other things all over the walls. So which set of kruvim are we talking about? We're going to see as we go through the Gemara over here.
Earlier on, you said the body that extended was amazing.
A
nest,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That reminds me of
Bati's arm
extending. I think that's the right answer.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So Maharsha learns over here that primarily we're talking about the kruvim that Moshe made, the original ones that were on the Aron that were made by Bezalel under Moshe's direction. So they would show them, they would tell them, Ruchi baskam lifnei amokim, look how beloved you are to Hashem, kichibas zocharim nekeva, like the way a man and a woman love one another. But Masiv Rav Chista says, what do you mean they're opening up the parochas in order to show them the Aron and the kruvim? You have a pasuk at the end of Parshas Bamidbar where it talks about how the Levim are responsible for transporting, in particular Bnei Kohas, are responsible for carrying the Kalim of the Mishkan. And it says over there, but they can't come in to look at them and to wrap them up themselves. The Kohanim first have to go in and wrap everything up in their appropriate into their appropriate cases that are described over there at the end of Parshas Bamidbar. And the pasuk specifically says, V'loya voyu liros, even the Levim should not come in to see Kivala Asa Kodesh when the Kodesh is being swallowed up, meaning when each thing is being covered up with its particular carrying case, because then the pasuk says they'd be chayiv misa b'dei shemayim. And what does kivala as a kodesh mean? When they're putting the kalim into their respective coverings, the levim are not allowed to watch. So what do we mean that now in the time of the Bais Hamikdash, the regular yid, not even the levim, can be looking into the kodesh hakodashim? What's going on? Amar of Nachman. Instead of Nachman answers, there's a big difference. Moshe l'kala, consider how it is with a kala. Calls man shehi beveisav biha, as long as she's in her father's house during the time of the Eversin, snua mi baila, then she's snia stick around her husband. She's not that familiar with him yet. So therefore, they're a little shy around one another. Kivin shebasal beis chamia, once she comes to her father-in-law's house, meaning once the nisuin has taken place, now ain't it snua mi baila, now she's not so shy and reserved around her husband, because now they've had the ultimate relationship together. The same way, in other words, Rav Nachman is saying, during the years in the Midbar, then it was only like the Erusin. They're not yet familiar enough with the Shechina, so therefore there's a concern if they look at the Kalim, then it's going to cause, it's going to be that they're going to think of it inappropriately, and therefore it's going to cause problems. Once they're in the Bais Hamikdash already, then they're more familiar with the Shechina, then they're like husband and wife living together. So now, yes, the Yidden can be looking at the Kruvim, and there's no problem with it. But Masiv Rav Chana Baruch Tina, Maisa B'Kari Nechad Trey Misasek Chola. What about, we had the story that we learned a few days ago about, we said in the second Mes Mikdash, when the Oren had been hidden away, that one time one of the Kohenim was playing with his axe and he dropped it on the floor. He noticed one of the floor tiles was sticking out or otherwise different, or he was playing with his axe and he dropped it or whatever. And we said he passed away and a fire came out and consumed the axe and whatever. So you see that even in the Mes Mikdash, the Jewish people are not supposed to be over familiar with the Shekhinah. Omalei, so Rav Nachman answers, Nisgar Shaka Amrit, you're talking about what happens after they're divorced. Now, to be sure, the Golos is not really a divorce. There are many psukim that actually stress the point that Golos is not a divorce. Hashem is not Chas V'Shalom divorced us. It's a separation, but still there's a certain degree of separation. So then, Nisgar Shachozru Chibos HaRishona. So then, if they get divorced and then they have a new Erisin, and then they have to start all over again with their relationship. So then they're not gasboy, they're not so familiar, they're not such on easy terms with one another. So the same way, the second Mes Hamikdash being on a lower level after the gerushin or separation or whatever, then therefore they're back to that they have to be careful around the kelim of the Mes Hamikdash, including the Aron. In the first Mes Hamikdash, when they were on a higher level, they're actually able to have the Poroichas rolled up and show them the Aron. This is talking about the first Beis Hamikdash, but that's what the Gemara is going to ask now, is what Poroichas. In the first Beis Hamikdash, there was a wall between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadosh, not a Poroichas. So that's... So that was talking about in the first Beis Hamikdash. When they brought the Orin into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, we're saying that the poles of the Orin were sticking out and pushing against the Poroichas so that you could see bumps on the outside. But now the Gemara is going to ask, what? That's what we have to figure out. So that's the question. Maya Skinan. What are we talking about when we're saying that they would roll up the Poroichas and show them the Kruvim? In name of Mikdash Rishon, are you talking about the first Beis Mikdash? Mihavoi Poroichas. Was there a Poroichas? There was a wall, one amma thick, that separated the Kurdish from the Kurdish Kadoshim, as we learned a few days ago. Elu b'mikdash sheni, you're talking about that this thing that was saying that they would roll up the poroichas and show them, is talking about the second Mes Hamikdash. Mi havu kruvim? Were there any kruvim over there? Because the kruvim were only in the first Mes Hamikdash. Whether we're talking about the kruvim that were on the Oren itself, as we learned the other day, was either taken into Golus and Bavel or hidden underneath the Mes Hamikdash, kruvim and all. The kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech also, the same thing. There's no, we don't find that they had those in the second Mes Hamikdash either. So in the second Mes Hamikdash, there were no kruvim to show them. For that matter, so in the second Mes Hamikdash, yes, there was a poroichas, but there's no kruvim. For that matter, Marsha points out that after all, we just said that you just said the second Mes Hamikdash. Anyway, they're not allowed to be over familiar with the Shekhinah, because, like, so to speak, after the divorce and then the reconciliation, and therefore they can't be showing them, they can't be rolling up the poroichas and showing them what's in Kodesh HaKadoshim anyway.
Where is the answer?
What?
It was a wall. Where is the entrance?
Well, there was an entrance, but the Gemara is not assuming at this point that there was a poroichas over it. The Gemara is... Well, that's what the Gemara is going to answer, but it's like this also. I mean, the Gemara is going to point out that the Gemara is going to point out that even in the first Beis Hamikdash, besides for the door of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there were other poroichas in over there as well. As the Gemara is going to point out now, there were other poroichas in throughout the Beis Hamikdash complex, and we can be talking about those. Because like this.
Yeah.
Talking about the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So there was a door there. The door had to be covered with something, of course. And the Gemara is going to point out that there were in the second Beis Hamikdash, there were poroichas in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In addition, there were also poroichas in various other places. As far as the first Beis Hamikdash, yes, there was a doorway over there, but was there a poroichas over the door? The Gemara has been assuming maybe not necessarily. Maybe there's a door there. There was a door, a wooden door covered with gold that they opened and closed. Not necessarily a poroichas. Hashem said in the Mishkan to make a poroichas. The Beis Hamikdash is different. I call b'ksav miyad Hashem alai hiskil. The whole blueprint of the Beis Hamikdash is also min hashamayim. Anyway, so But even I guess also what the Gemara is saying is even if there was a poroiches over the door of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that might not have been large enough for them to really see in there and see the kruvim, especially if we're talking about the large kruvim that were on the sides of the Aron. The small kruvim that are on top of the Aron, maybe they'd be able to see them through the door. But the large ones were saying that were standing on the floor and the wingspan fills up the whole Kodesh HaKadoshim, they don't necessarily have they're not necessarily going to be able to see them. There were two sets of three-dimensional kruvim, plus there was one set, as the Gemara is going to point out in a second, there was also a set of kruvim on the walls. There were also designs of kruvim on the walls. Yeah.
If they were able to see them, are they allowed to look at them?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. That's what we said. In the first Beis HaMikdash, they're allowed to be on more familiar terms with the Shekhinah. Therefore, yes, they could be showing them. The question, what's bothering the Gemara, is what's this expression, "Megalim lahem es haparoiches," that they would roll up the paroiches to show them, because what paroiches in the first Beis Hamikdash? Inem b'mikdash rishon mihavoy paroiches. In the first Beis Hamikdash, was there a paroiches? There was a wall there, and b'pashtos there was a door in the wall. Elab mikdash sheni mihavo kruvim. Are you talking about this? And again, even if there was a paroiches over the door, that's not necessarily megalim lahem es haparoiches. Suggests maybe that you have a large paroiches over there that you have to roll up and push aside. A small paroiches that just covers the doorway is not necessarily something that you describe as megalim lahem, like you have to roll it up. Well, it wasn't so small, but it wasn't so. Well, so actually, so it mentions in a medrash that the doorway was 10 amos wide. Most of the doorways in the Beis HaMikdash were 10 amos wide, and the Aron itself, the Aron itself was also 10 amos wide in a certain dimension, and therefore they couldn't get it in. And that's why Shlomo had to daven that Hashem should allow it in. It was supposed to, what? No, because they put it in only after the Beis HaMikdash was completed. But anyway, so getting back to the Gemara, so in name of Mikdash Rishon, mi havoi paroiches. So in the first Beis Hamikdash, was there a paroiches? Again, even if there is a paroiches over the door of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's still not really large enough for us to describe it as megalim lahem, that we roll up the paroiches. At most, fine, they move it aside so that you can see it. Elab Mikdash Sheni, mi havo kruvim. Are you talking about the second Beis Hamikdash? There were no kruvim. There were no three-dimensional kruvim in the second Beis Hamikdash. The ones on top of the Aron went wherever the Aron went. And the ones, the freestanding ones that Shlomo had built, were also, they went wherever the Aron went.
Double?
Well, so the wall the Gemara hasn't gotten to yet. But the ones on the wall the Gemara hasn't gotten to yet. But wait. So the answer is La'olam HaMikdash Rishon. We can say the description where they would roll up the paroiches and show them is in fact referring to the first Beis HaMikdash, or my paroiches debavim. We can mean the paroiches in that were in front of the doors. So yes, we do mean the paroiches in front of the door of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but we also mean the other paroiches in that are in between. The Yidden are standing out in the Azara. There are going to be a few paroiches in that are going to separate them from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They would have to roll them all up in order to show them this. As in fact, Rav Zera tells us in the name of Rav, Shloisha also pareches hoyo b'mikdash. In the second Beis HaMikdash, there were 13 pareches in. So now, in the first Beis HaMikdash, they wouldn't have needed quite so many, but still, there were more pareches in than just the one in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, because Shiva connected Shiva Sha'arim. He had seven of them for the seven gateways of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, you have the gates themselves were closed and locked at night. But during the daytime, they would be open so people could come in, but they still had a paroiches in front of them for tznius. You don't just want people standing on the outside and staring into the Azara. So therefore, they had a paroiches covering them during the day to keep things tzniustik. So that's seven. Then you had shtayim, achas the pischa shel heichol, achas the pischa shel olam. Then you have in the entrance way to the heichol, you have one in front of the heichol, one in front of the door of the heichol, and one in front of the door of the olam. So the olam you have over here in the picture on the paroiches over here of the Aron. You have the front doorway that you see over there is the front door of the olam. That was 40 by 20 amos. It was double the height and double the width of any of the other gates in the Beis HaMikdash complex. And it was open. There were no doors in it. But again, they had a paroiches on it, so people are not staring into the ulam. Then behind that, you have that the ulam is 10 amos deep. As you walk in, you walk 10 amos, and then you get to the doors of the heichol. And the heichol had doors. Again, those doors were locked at night. They had to open them first thing in the morning. And then again, during the day, there would be a paroiches covering it again, so people are not just staring into the heichol. So far you have 9, 7 for the 7 gates, 1 for the Olam, 1 for the Heichal. Shtayim bedvir. Then you have 2 separating the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as we learned the other day, because in the second Mesa Mikdash, they have the suffix whether the one Amma between them properly belongs to the Kodesh or to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Or Shtayim, Kenegdan Ba'aliyah. Then you have, there was a second floor of the Mesa Mikdash. There was a second floor of the Heichal, and they also had a division over there between the part that's above the Kodesh and the part that's above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they had 2 Poroches hanging there the same way in order to separate one from the other. So altogether, that's 13. So in the same vein, in other words, the point is that in the first Beis Mikdash, they also had Poroichasin covering the various doorways. So therefore, yes, when we say Megalam Lahamsa Poroichas, that's what we mean. We mean, in other words, they would have to roll up the one in front of the Ulam, and the one in front of the Heichal, and the one in front of the doorway of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Fine, there's not a Poroichas covering the entire 20 by 40 like there is in the second Beis Mikdash, but there's a Poroichas covering the doorway, however big the doorway was, and therefore that's one of the Poroichas in that we mean that they would roll up to show them. On the other hand, Rab Acha bar Yaakov amar lo olam mikdasheni, Rab Acha bar Yaakov gives a different answer. He says, no, the Kruvim that they're showing the Jewish people and showing them, look how beloved you are to Hashem, like a Zohar and an Akeva together, that is not that we are talking about in the second Mesa Mikdash, but Kruvim Ditsurta Habukaimi. Rather, what we mean is there were still the Kruvim that were designed or painted on the walls. So in the first Beis Mikdash, you have a description of that, as the Gemara is going to quote now from the Pasuk. And in the second Beis Mikdash, they had that as well. We talked about the other day that the Yerushalmi, I think, brings, when the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed, they didn't destroy it down to the foundations like the way the Romans did with the second Beis Mikdash. With the Romans, we know one of the things we commemorate on Tisha B'Av is V'necha Sha'ir, that Turnus Rufus plowed up the entire site of the Beis Mikdash and Yerushalayim in general, which makes it very difficult to know where anything was back then. But the first Beis Mikdash, they didn't. They basically just destroyed the roofs and part of the walls. So part of the walls was still intact when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash 52 years later. And then when they finally completed it 70 years later. So therefore, some of these Kruvim Ditsurta, some of these designs that were on the wall, were still there. Dichtiv, and you have by the first Beis Mikdash, it describes the Es Kokires Habayis, all of the walls of the house, meaning of the Heifel, both the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Mesav Kola, they were surrounded by designs. The Kola literally means what do you call it? Braided. Rashi describes they had pictures, they had depictions of network, of nets all over them. So like there was a design made looking like a net, or looking like nets and braids all over. Kruvim b'simodas, the pasuk continues, there were kruvim and there were palm trees, ufturei tzitzim, and there were open blossoms of flowers were part of the design as well, v'tzipa zahav, and then they plated it with gold, miyushar al mechukah, flattened out over what was engraved, meaning, in other words, Rashi explains over there and in other places, you can't make gold stick directly to stone, it won't stick. So what they had to do is they had wood paneling on the inside of the Heichal, and on that paneling, they made all these designs that the Pasuk is describing. Then they put gold on it, and they beat the gold such that it would go, such that the gold would sink in and then stick out, as the case may be, according to the design. So that way, the design is not hidden by the gold. That way, you see the design in the gold, but it's actually just based on what was in the wood underneath the gold.
The wood behind it.
Yeah, so there's wood behind it. That's the point, yeah. So the point is, in other words, so there were kruvim designed, painted all over the walls, and therefore those are the ones that they would show. So we don't have to say anymore that they're showing the Jewish people what's going on in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They could be showing them just the ones that are in the Kodesh and showing them that look these designs show how beloved you are to Hashem. And the pasuk continues, another pasuk describing the designs that were in the Beis Mikdash. It has the expression kima'ar ish v'loyos, like the ma'ar of a man and lawyers. So in the simple sense, Mephoshim on the pasuk explained that ma'ar does mean joined together, and lawyers means something like designs or wreaths or something like that. But the Gemara is doubting, ma'ar ish v'loyos, omer rab v'rav shila, ki ish ha'mo'ura b'lavoya shaloy. It means there was a design like a man who's hugging his lavoya, his companion, meaning his wife. So that means, in other words, that's as much as to say that that's how the kruvim were designed and painted over there, is they had these designs of a husband and wife hugging to represent, again, the great Abba and the great Chiba between the Eibishter and the Jewish people. there's, by the way, in the Gemara over here, if you take a look, there's a very interesting Tosfos over here. It starts on Amud Aleph, and it doesn't look very long. Then you go to Amud Beis, and whoa, there's the big gigantic discussion that Tosfos has on the question. They start off with the question: are you allowed to draw designs in Machzorim like this? And you find in various illuminated Machzorim from the times of Tosfos and later, you find they have all these ones with beautiful designs of animals and birds and all kinds of things like that. And are you allowed to do it? And Tosfos gets into an enormous discussion. And Machzor, maybe you shouldn't do it because it'll distract the person who's davening. But what about Bechlal? Are you allowed to draw such designs? And Tosfos gets into a long arichus about. They end up saying that if it's a two-dimensional design, you're just painting or drawing on paper, then there's not really a problem with it. The problem you have in halacha, you're not allowed to make depictions of people, for example, but that would only be if it's three-dimensional, not if it's just painted or drawn on a flat piece of paper. Not everybody agrees with that. There are many poskim who disagree with Tosfos on that. You have hologram, right? You have holograms is another question. Well, holograms are appear to our eyes as three-dimensional. So obviously those didn't exist in Tosfos' time, so they're not talking about those. But they're talking about, in other words, three-dimensional as in like a sculpture or a statue, or even an image on a coin. So that might of a person might be problematic. You find that all the coins from Jewish kings and from Jewish leaders that we have from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, we have from the Hashmonaim, we have from Hordus and his successors, we have from the leaders of the revolts against the Romans. None of them ever depict people. Because you have the question in halacha of whether you'd be allowed to do that in something that sticks out from the surface of the coin. There's a well-known story also involving Rabbi Lazar Rekeach, a famous Rav of a few hundred years ago. He was a Rav in Amsterdam for a while. At one point, the government was very grateful. The Dutch government was very grateful to, no, I think what it was is actually the Yidden over there. They loved him so much. They arranged with the government to be able to strike a medal in his honor that would show his picture. But he and many other Rabbanim of that time disapproved of that, and the result is that metal is actually quite rare now. Because most of them were melted down. But the point is, Tosfos ends up saying there's no problem of a picture of a person or of any of these other things in 2D. Not everybody agrees with that, and you have different poskim on the subject. One interesting thing in that regard, worth mentioning, speaking of these illuminated machzorim and agadas and whatnot, there's a very interesting one that dates to about 700 years ago from someplace in Germany. They call it the Bird's Head Haggadah. So they have on the sides there, they have depictions of Jews doing the mitzvahs of Pesach and Jews going out of Mitzrayim and all sorts of things. And every single picture of a person, instead of a person's head, they have a bird's head instead. So apparently what it is either the illustrator himself or whoever commissioned the Haggadah from him was concerned about this question of whether you're allowed to do 2D depictions of human figures. And therefore instead he replaced them with that. But Tosfos gets into a long arichos about that based on this Gemara over here, where we're saying that they had pictures of Kruvim as a depiction of a husband and wife hugging one another on the walls. The fact is, this was Min HaShemayim. It was HaKol B'Ksav Miyad Hashem. So there might be a special reason why that was Mutter, where it might not be Mutter in other places.
Earlier, you said that the doors were 10 amas by 20 amas?
Most doors in the Beis Hamikdash were 10 by 20 amas, yeah. Except for the one of the
absolutely giants.
Yeah.
Absolutely giants.
Yeah, indeed. Except for the one of the Heichal, except for the one of the Ulam was 20 by 40.
Feet or yards, it's huge.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Okay, onward. So that's another possible. So we have two possible explanations of what kruvim were they showing them. Either they're showing them the kruvim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim itself, and then that would mean that this description of them showing it to them has to only be during the first Beis Hamikdash. Or it means that they're showing them the Kruvim Ditzurta, the ones that are depicted on the walls, and that they could show them even in the second Beis Hamikdash. Well, the Gemara continues. Amar Ish Lakish, B'shash Nichnesu Ovdik Achavim LaHeichel, when the Goyim came into the Heichel at the time of the Churban, Motsu Kruvim Amurim Zebezeh, they found the Kruvim hugging one another. They brought them out to the marketplace of Omru, and they said, Yisrael halalu shebechosin bracha kelosin klala. How could it be? These Jews, where we know their bracha is a bracha that comes true, and their klala is a klala that comes true, oiskin b'dvorim halalu, they're involved with such things. In other words, they knew that they knew that towards the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, the Jewish people had been worshipping Avodah Zarah, but they also knew that these kruvim dated to long before that, when the Yidden were kosher. So now they're saying, though, the fact is, this whole depiction that we're saying over here of us and the Eibishter as a loving husband and wife is something that's meant to be kept private. These goyim have no sense of that, so they're taking and making a public spectacle out of it. And to them, all they see is the grubber gashness of it, basically. So Marsha points out, you know, we have the famous thing that the Gemara says that the goyim don't even realize how much they lost with the Churban, because we bring every year on Sukkot, we bring 70 parim corresponding to them to daven on their behalf. So we're giving them a bracha, and then on the other hand, and the goyim realize that now they're saying that, look at this, how is it the Jews are so involved in Arayus that even in their holiest place they have such depictions? Because again, all they're seeing is the grub kind of it. Miyad hizilum. Right away, then they saw. Right, so right away that caused the Jewish people to be degraded in their eyes. Shenema, as the pasuk says, kol mechabdera hiziluha. All of those who used to honor the Jewish people degraded her. Kiro ervasa, because they saw her embarrassment. Meaning, in other words, now they saw what they thought is that the Jewish people are just into a grubber gashmius of a husband and wife, and not realizing the kedusha that's behind it. Now, the question would be then, although a bunch of the Mephoshim ask, we're talking at the time of the Churban, what are the Kruvim doing Ma'urim Zebezeh? The Gemara elsewhere talks about that only when the Jewish people are Oisin Ritzon Shamakim, only then would they be hugging one another. When they're not Oisin Ritzon Shamakim, then just the opposite, they'd be turned away from one another. Now, one obvious answer you could say is our Gemara doesn't agree with that. The Gemara itself in Bava Basra brings two different opinions on that subject. However, most of the Mephoshim want to understand that our Gemara is also talking about that it was that they were in the position that they should be when Osin Ritzon Shamakim. So you have a few different answers. The Rimi Gash gives an answer that he says the Eibishter wanted the Goyim to have some kind of inkling of how close the relationship of he and the Jewish people had once been. Now they take it in a grubber way, as we're saying over here, but the Eibishter wanted to show them how it once was. So that they should realize, in other words, they shouldn't think that Yodenu Rama, that we're the ones who are overpowered. They should realize that the Eibishter once had such a relationship with the Jewish people, and he will have one with us again. Then you have the Ritva brings almost an opposite answer, that Hashem did a nest Davke, in order to make the Jewish people degraded in their eyes, so that they should feel more superior, like over the Jewish people. It's all part of the punishment of the Churban, basically. And then you have an explanation. A Pichsidus, which is brought in many various Sfarim, the Churban itself is the expression of the Eibishter's ultimate love to us. First of all, that he poured out his anger only on the Eitz and Ba'avonim of the Bismikdash rather than destroying us. Rachman al-Tzlan, you have the metaphor, in Chassidus, you have the metaphor when a Rebbe wants to tell a particularly deep concept to a Talmud, and he first withdraws within himself in order to work it out in his head, and only then he can be mashpia to the Talmud, and it seems like he's abandoned the Talmud, and really he's only doing it for the Talmud's benefit. And so it is with the Churban and the Golos. And you have a vort actually that's brought in Bnei Yisoschar. You have a vort that's brought from Rav Pinchas Koritzer al derech, like you have. There's a din in halacha that a husband is required to be with his wife before he goes away on a trip. So the same way now, the last moment before the Shechina is leaving the Beis Mikdash, and the Eibishter was going to show this ultimate connection with the Jewish people by having the Kruvim showing that they're hugging one another. Okay, the Gemara continues. Piska, so quoting from the Mishnah, Ushtia Hoysen Nikris Mechola, we said in the second Beis Mikdash, they didn't have the Aron, but instead there was the Evan Shsia over there, and the Kohen Gadol would place the Ketores on the Evan Shsia. So why is it called Shsia? Tana, Shemimena Hushdasa Olam. The entire world was founded from that stone. So in other words, that was the first thing that Hashem created, and then the whole world was created from that. Maharsha refers over here to a medrash that was the very same stone that Yaakov set up, the one that he slept on, that he put around his head that night, and then he put it up as a matzeva, etc. That's the very same stone that we're talking about now. Tanya, Tana, or Tnan, Commander Omer, Olam Mitzia Nivra. In which case, our Mishnah then follows the opinion that says that the world was created from Tzion, meaning first Hashem created Tzion, the site of the Beis Mikdash, and then he created everything else around it, going outward from there. Hakosef makes an interesting point over here. Rashi stresses the point, Tzion Nivra Tchila, because there used to be, and I guess to a certain extent there is even now, a popular notion among people who don't believe in the Eibishter and don't believe in the Torah, that certain things in the world have always existed. So back then there was a shita of Aristotle that claimed that the world is always pre-existing and the Eibishter hadn't created it. You have nowadays if people believe in the Big Bang and whatever came before it and whatever nonsense all that is. The point is, therefore, we chas v'shalom to think that way. It's a basic thing of Yiddishkeit that Bereshis bar elokim, as Shemayim ves aretz. Therefore, HaKosev says, therefore, Rashi has to stress the point over here that Sion was created. You shouldn't think it's pre-existing, but then everything else was created after that.
You also think because of the dinosaur bones that there
was and they think of all kinds of things. Yeah. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, that there's machlokas on this point. Rabbi Yezer says the world was created beginning from the middle and then working outward. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Bitzeketz ofer lamutzak." When Hashem poured out dust onto the mutzak, so mutzak means the foundation. So, like there was one foundation, and then Hashem, so to speak, poured more and more dust around it, or to govim yudubaku, and all of the clods of dirt stuck together, and that's how the world was created. So you start out with one rock, and then you keep on adding more and more around it. Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, says, Fakert, it was created beginning from the sides. You have four basic foundations, and then Hashem that starts working inward from there until they all join together and form one complete world. Shenema, as you have another pasuk also in Eov, Kila Sheleg Yomer Heve Oret, Hashem says to the snow, become the earth. The Geshem Mutter and the rain and the showers of rain, the Geshem Mitzray Suzay and the showers of its strong rain. Meaning, in other words, Rashi explains, according to Rabbi Yeshua, what the Pasuk is saying is Hashem takes to begin with like one snow, like one, so to speak, one snowball, Hashem tells the snow and the Geshem and the Mutter and all of that to come from the sides and all join together and thicken and become earth. Like this, you have the Rambam describes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah that even now you have a certain percentage all the time. You have the land that's near the water, or the water that's near the land. Some of the water eventually turns into dirt because it gets like thickened and whatever and coarsened and becomes dirt. So now by Ma'aseh Bereishis, Rabbi Yeshua is describing that Hashem did the same kind of thing on a larger scale. Rabbi Yitzchak says Hashem threw a rock into the sea, and from that the world was founded. As you have another pasuk in Eov, what? Hashem asks Eov, you think you understand how I run the world? Do you know on what the foundations of the world were sunk? Implying that you have something that was sunk into the ground to create it, or who threw its foundation stone, implying that there's a stone that was thrown, and that's the world was created beginning with that. Now, what all of them mean? What all of them mean on a deeper level? Obviously, the Eibishter is not like a human craftsman who still has to stick dirt and whatever together. So you have different points that different svarim talk about. Alpi Chakira and Alpi Kabbalah and all kinds of things. For example, Alpi Kabbalah, we know you have Mamala Kalaman and Soiv Kalaman. So when we're saying, are we starting from the middle or are we starting from the sides, that may represent, in other words, are we talking about is Mamala the main thing or is Soiv the main thing? And similarly with each of the others, when we talk about throwing a rock into the sea, so we have, you know, you have the Tzimtzum, you have the Tzimtzum Otzum, then you have the Kav, and so on and so forth. So that, so the Gemara may be hinting at all of that. The world was created beginning from Tzion, which Marashah says this may actually be the same as Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer said it was created from the middle, but he didn't specify where the middle is. The Chachamim are telling you that middle is Tzion in the site of Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash. On that, the Maharal explains, B'chlal, whenever we talk about the middle of something, we mean like the thing that's of central importance. So the Chum is saying the thing of central importance to the world is Yerushalayim, is the site of the Beis Hamikdash. And therefore, in that sense, metaphorically, we describe Hashem creating that first. On the other hand, the opposite opinion, Rabbi Yeshua says that you start from the sides, might be al derech soif maisa machshava tchila, that Hashem created it last, but he intended it first. In fact, Ben Yoyada says the two opinions over here may represent b'maisa, b'machshava versus b'maisa. One began from the middle, the other began from the sides.
It says that the tzaddik is the foundation of the world, right?
Yeah.
Zion is the same gematria as Yosef.
Okay.
So therefore, so therefore
the Yosef Tzadik. So Yosef Tzadik Tzion represents the foundation of the world. Good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the Chamzeh Mitzion Nivra Shenema, as the pasuk says, Mizmor LaOsef Kela Lekim Hashem Dibre VaYikra Oretz. Hashem spoke and he called to the world. Mimizrach Shemesh Ad Mavoyo, from the east, from where the sun rises until it sets. VaOmer, and the next pasuk continues, Mitzion Michlau Yofi, from Tzion, from the perfection of beauty. Elikim Ayfiyah, Hashem has appeared, meaning Mimenu Muchlau Yofi Yishaloylam, from Tzion was established and was completed the beauty of the world. We live in a beautiful world, and it all started mitzion. It all started that Hashem began creating it from tzion, and therefore that would be the Evan Shia that it said in the Mishnah video. Tanya, and then we learn further in a Braisa. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer told us a Shemayim Mishamayim Nivru. What about now? Till now we've been talking about what's on earth. What about what's in Shemayim? Now you have Eila Soldas Shemayim Va'aretz. So the Shemayim include a lot of Toldas. You have the various stars and planets and whatnot that exist in Shemayim. So he says, Toldas Shemayim Mishamayim Nivru. Those were created from Shemayim. So Hashem created Shemayim. And then from within Shemayim, Hashem created those various Toldas. These are the toldos, these are the descendants of Shemayim and Oretz when they were created. So in other words, the ones of Shemayim were created from Shemayim, the ones of Oretz were created from Oretz. The Chum say all of them were that both these and those were created from Tzion. Now, what do we mean, both these and those? Tosfos says it means we're going back to what we said before about the middle and the sides, that all of it was created from Tzion. Marsha doesn't really like that explanation, because now we're talking a new Braisa. It doesn't mention the middle and the sides. It's talking about Shemayim V'aretz. Rather, he says, no, in this Braisa, the Chachamim are saying that here, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was saying that told us a Shemayim were created from Shemayim and told us a Oretz were created from Oretz. The Chachamim are saying that no, both these and those, both told us a Shemayim and told us Oretz, Mitzion Nivru, were created beginning from Tzion. As we said, Shenema Mitzion Michlal Yofi, Mimenu Michlal Yofi Yishaloylam, the entire beauty of the world, which includes even the told us a Shemayim, the beautiful stars and planets and everything else that exists in space, was all created beginning from Tzion. So again, one way of looking at it is, does Shemayim have a certain importance of its own, or is it all Shemayim and all the Olam HaSal Yonim are all created for the purpose, Lasis L'Yizbarach, Didav HaTachtonim, and in that case, we say they start from Tzion in the sense that that is the central thing from which everything else is created. Everything else is created based on that. On the other hand, if you look at it from the point of view of Seder Ishtalshalos, then you have Olam HaAsiya, including our world, is the last thing that was created. So that would explain the different opinions over here, whether they were created independently or whether they were all created from Tzion, because Tzion is what they're all created for the sake of.
What does it mean,
Mitzion Michlal Yofi? From Tzion, literally it means from Tzion, from the perfection of beauty, Elikim Efiyah, Hashem has shown forth.
You're also climbing up over the walls just to look at it.
Yeah, that's true also. And I'm here. Okay. Yeah. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, Chof Kislev, part of the Chag HaGa'ola of the Alter Rebbe. So the Geula of the Alter Rebbe on Yutus Kislev also is connected with the redemption of Malka Mashicha. So what do you have? The whole idea of Chag Geula, of Chag HaChagim. So you have the pasuk that we sing, Hodeh B'Shalom Nafshi Mikrovli, Hashem has saved, Hashem has redeemed my soul in peace from the fight against me, Ki B'Rabim Ho Yerimodi, because the many were with me. And we know the Alter Rebbe himself writes in his famous letter that he says, when I was saying this pasuk in Tehillim, then I went out from B'Shalom Me'Hashem Shalom. So now, what's the point of the Alter Rebbe's Geula on Yutus Kislev as a Chotzer Samayonis Chotzer? As we know, in fact, that mainly began only after Petersburg. So, and since through a Chotzer Samayonis Chotzer, through that Mashiach will come. So it comes out that the Alter Rebbe's Geula is a very important phase in the Poder B'Shalom Nafshi of David Malka Mashiach. And the Poder B'Shalom Nafshi also of Hashem and the Jewish people, where we have, as the expression in the Gemara goes, that when a person is Osik B'Todo of Gmilas Hasadim, Hashem says that I consider as though Da'ani Liul Avonai Mibein Umas Ha'olam, as though he redeemed me and my children from among the Umas Ha'olam. So therefore, so the Diyah of the Alter Rebbe and the Hafatzah Samayonis is an important step on the road to that. Continuing with Halachas of Davening on Shabbos, the time of Tefillas Musaf is supposed to be right after Shachris. You shouldn't delay it beyond 7 hours into the day, which is one Shah's minus past Chatzos. If it's delayed any more than that, then a person is called Peshea. It's called that he's careless. However, the fact is, the time of Musaf is all day, and therefore you are allowed to daven it later, but luckily you should daven it before 7 hours. Now, what happens if a person has to daven the two tefillahs? It's time for Mincha, but he hasn't yet davened Musaf. So then he should, in principle, daven Mincha first and then Musaf, because Mincha is more Todir. And we know Todir Vashena Todir, Todir Koidim. However, Betzibu, you shouldn't do that. The Alter Rebbe adds another, because Betzibu would be too confusing. The Alter Rebbe adds another point as well. If you're davening Mincha now, because, for example, you want to eat, and it's already the time of Mincha, and you're not supposed to be eating, then it's a valid thing to daven Mincha first. Otherwise, if it's not because you're in a hurry to eat, then you should daven Musa first, and then when it comes Mincha Ktana, then if you've gotten already to the time of Mincha Ktana, and you still haven't davened Musa, then you should definitely daven Mincha first. The Mincha Gdola is one thing, but Mincha Ktana already is the primary time for Mincha, so then, yes, you should daven Mincha first, and only the Musa, but again, with Sibur, you don't do that. I'm not a man.